Welcome, everyone, to this WebSphere Support Technical Exchange session. Today's topic is Overview of Network Interface Types, Configurations, and Best Practices on IBM Data Power Gateway Firmware Version 7.1. The presenters are Chris Sloan and Phil Johnson. Chris and Phil work in IBM Data Power Level 2 and have experience in configuring and troubleshooting network interfaces on Data Power. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Chris.
Thanks, Kathy. All right, so we can go to slide 2. And just the agenda for today, me and my colleague Phil are going to go over the network interface types and their configuration, and that's going to include Ethernet, VLAN, and LinkAG interfaces. We're also going to go over the common network settings on the appliance. We're also going to go into the routing table and how network routing decisions are made on Data Power appliances, as well as discuss standby control, which is a commonly used way to provide high availability. And then we're going to finish off with some common gotchas, which we see are high PMR drivers in the field, and some ways you can avoid those common issues. Slide 3, please. All right, so we're going to start off with the shared interface settings, and these are the settings that are going to be the same no matter what type of interface you're setting up, whether it's Ethernet, VLAN, or link aggregation. The first setting is the IP configuration mode, and the most common is static, and in this case, you're going to manually define your IP address, your static routes, and your gateways for routing. Less common, we do offer DHCP, which is going to provide automatic configuration and assignment of IPv4 addresses in routing. And we also provide SLAC as well, which is going to be automatic configuration and assignment for IPv6 addresses in routing. Slide 4, please. The primary IP address is going to be the IP address in CIDR notation. In addition to the primary IP address, you can also specify additional IP addresses in the secondary IP address tab as well. There's also fields for IPv4 and IPv6 default gateways. These default gateways are used to route traffic if there is no static route defined. When you're setting up your default gateways, these are generally provided by your network team, and these gateways must be in the same subnet as the primary IP you've configured on the interface. Slide 5, please. On this, you're also going to be able to set up the static routes for your specific interface. The purpose of a static route is to provide a route to a specific destination or a specific range of destinations. Multiple static routes can be configured on each interface. And similarly with the default gateway, the next hop gateway that you define in your static route must be in the same subnet as the primary IP address on your interface. Slide 6, please.
Okay, so this is Phil Johnson. I'm actually going to be speaking from here. just to discuss the Ethernet interfaces, really, depending on the machine type of the physical device, there can be anywhere from 4 to 12 interface ports. Depending on the machine types, both 1 gig and physical machine types have both 1 gig and 10 gig Ethernet ports, whereas the virtual machine types will have 4 Ethernet ports by default. Keep in mind, however, that the virtual data power devices, they can be configured to add additional interfaces. The interface configuration for the physical and virtual devices are the same, so the information that we're covering for the Ethernet interface, the VLAN interface, and the link aggregation interface types can be relevant for both virtual and physical machines. Slide 7, please. Okay, this slide is just an overview of the main tab of the Ethernet interface configuration page, so you can kind of get an idea of and see all the parameters that we've been discussing up to this point. If you notice, the parameters that we've been discussing are just in the main tab. We're going to cover the parameters of the advanced tab in the next slides. Okay. Slide 8, please. Okay, so the MAC address is a unique identifier. For those who are not familiar with what a MAC address is, the MAC address is a unique identifier which is assigned or burned in to the network interface card by the manufacturer of the network interface card. If you do not want to use the burned-in MAC address, you can create a custom MAC address to be used. The physical mode is for setting the speed and direction of the Ethernet physical layer. This is typically set to auto, which means data power and the switch will auto-negotiate the speed and direction. If auto-negotiation cannot be used, then you can manually choose the mode to be used. Slide 9, please. Okay, so data power will use GSO, or generic segmentation offload, by default. This means that packets will be combined by the network interface card, and this makes processing more efficient for data power. The IPv6 address duplicate address detection, or DAD, is for doing exactly what it says. It allows for detection of duplicate IPv6 addresses on the network. Also, the neighbor discovery is used to find link layer addresses of neighbors, find neighboring routers, and actively track neighbor reachability. Really, these settings should be used only if you're configuring IPv6 addresses. Typically, most of the time what we see are people using the IPv4 addresses, although I suspect in the near future that we'll start seeing more and more use of the IPv6 addresses. Okay, slide 10, please. Okay, so this slide just shows a picture of the Ethernet Interface Advanced tab, just to kind of get an idea of the parameters that I just covered. The parameters in the red boxes are unique to just the Ethernet interface type, so you won't see these on the VLAN or the link aggregation interface types. Here, I should also note that flow control is set to auto, and this is set to auto by default and should not be disabled. Slide 11, please. If link aggregation, just to kind of cover what VLAN is, if link aggregation is the combining of multiple physical interface ports, then you can think of VLAN as turning one physical interface port into multiple logical interface ports. VLAN interfaces are widely used. However, you should have your network team involved when configuring these interface types because the switch must also be configured for trunk mode. So if your switch is not configured for VLAN, then VLAN will not work on data power. Okay. Slide 12, please. Okay. This slide shows the VLAN interface configuration page. The VLAN interface can be hosted on either an Ethernet or link aggregation interface type. The VLAN interface is configured on top of an Ethernet interface, so you'll need to choose which interface to use. The VLAN identifier is the unique ID which distinguishes traffic for each VLAN interface configured on the physical interface. So it's how this traffic is going to be able to honestly be identified. The outbound priority is a value which will be interpreted by the switch to decide the priority of the traffic from this interface. Okay, can we do slide 13, please? And I'm going to hand it back to Chris.
Thanks, Phil. So I'm going to go over link aggregation interfaces. As Phil was saying, you know, with the VLAN, you're taking a single physical interface and splitting it up into multiple logical interfaces. Link aggregation is kind of the opposite. We're going to take multiple physical Ethernet interfaces, and we're going to combine them into a single logical interface, which is going to all use one IP address. The benefits of link aggregation, one of the big ones is throughput. So both transmit-based and LACP can increase the throughput potential. Transmit-based is going to distribute outgoing traffic among all the different links that are part of the link aggregation. LACP is actually going to use all of the links for incoming and outgoing traffic. So LACP will provide the most available throughput out of the different types. Slide 14, please. Another benefit of link aggregation is redundancy, which is a big pain point when setting up your network topology. Link aggregation can eliminate a common single point of failure, which is the uplink from data power to the switch. This single point of failure can be caused by the appliance NIC, the physical cable, or the switch or switch port. Setting up LACP can help eliminate all of these factors as a single point of failure. All three types of aggregation can handle failover of a single interface or link if any of those were to go down. Slide 15, please. The different types of aggregation modes are going to be active backup, transmit, and LACP. With active backup, there's going to be one active link at all times. The other links are going to be there just as a form of backup if there's any failover. If the active link is lost, then it will switch to one of the backup links. For transmit, there's going to be a single link for any incoming traffic to the appliance. However, all the outgoing traffic is going to be distributed among all the links. Active backup and transmit both can be set up just on data power, and it doesn't require any additional configuration from the switch perspective. If you're going to use LACP, that's going to require support on the switch as well. LACP, when it's set up on both data power and the switch, there's going to be some negotiation between those to determine which is the correct interface to use. And LACP is going to provide automatic failover, and it's going to be able to use the throughput of all the links configured in the aggregation. Slide 16, please. When you're setting up your link aggregation, you're going to have to define the Ethernet links that are going to be used. This is going to be the list of Ethernet interfaces that are part of that aggregation. After adding the interface to the aggregation, the option Enable for Link Aggregation must be enabled on the Ethernet interface. The Ethernet interface used cannot be part of any other link aggregation, and it cannot have any VLANs defined on top of it. Slide 17. This is just an example of what the link aggregation configuration is going to look like in the web GUI. Up at the top, we have some of the common settings. Highlighted in red are the additional settings that are going to be there depending on if it's link aggregation instead of Ethernet. So you'll be able to choose your aggregation mode as well as add any number of Ethernet links. Slide 18. So on the appliance, aside from the interface configuration, there is also the device-wide network settings, which can be configured in the default domain. The first one, which was new to version 7 and up, is the ability to block non-management traffic for invalid interface configuration. This is enabled by default, and we would recommend that you keep it that way for most use cases. When this is enabled, the appliance is not going to accept any service traffic if there's any invalid interface configuration. However, it will be able to accept web GUI and SSH traffic. You can optionally disable this, and which will restore connectivity. However, we would suggest that you make sure you address any interface configuration as opposed to working around it in that manner. There's also the disable ICMP option. You can disable the appliance responding to ICMP requests. In this setting, you can specify echo, timestamp, information, and address mask, and you can determine which of those ICMP requests you want data power to respond to and not respond to. Slide 19, please. By default, disable ECN is going to be off. This setting controls if ECN-capable sessions are used. ECN is used for communicating network congestion between data power and other appliances on the network. Enable destination-based routing is also going to be off by default. This should only be enabled for backwards compatibility if absolutely necessary. When off, the appliance will respond to client requests from any interface instead of only on the receiving interface. Relax interface isolation is on by default, and this allows packets to be received as long as the interface contains an IP in the same subnet as the source IP. Slide 20, please. Disable interface isolation is off by default. When set to off, packets are only accepted if the destination is explicitly configured on that interface. If you were to enable this, you would be able to accept traffic for an IP even if it was not enabled on the interface that is receiving it. The TCP attempts setting is going to enable the number of times a TCP SYN is retried when there is no response. Similarly, the ARP attempts is going to control the number of times a failed ARP is retried. The ARP attempt interval will control the number of milliseconds between each ARP attempt in the case of any failed ARP requests. Slide 21, please. Enable reverse path filtering is also off by default. When off, the interface will accept packets with a source address it cannot route. When on, packets with a non-routable source address are ignored. In order to use standby control, this setting must be off. So with most of these settings, we generally would suggest that you keep these as the default unless you have a very specific business use case to change them. Enable TCP window scaling will default to on, and this is going to allow window scaling, which can negotiate window sizes greater than 64 kilobytes. The starting ephemeral port is going to determine the lowest port used for outbound TCP and UDP connections. Slide 22, please. And this is just a view of the web GUI. When you go into the default domain and pull up the network settings, you can see here the different settings that we've gone over. For example, disable ICMP, you can add whichever of those you want to disable. By default, just timestamp is disabled. Slide 23.
All right, and this is Phil again, and I'll take over. Okay, so the routing table. Data Tower will look to the routing table to determine the next hop on the network when the destination IP is outside of the configured subnet. So in order for traffic to leave the network, it must be directed to a gateway access point to outside the network. If there's no gateway defined, then traffic with a destination outside the network will be lost and can definitely cause outages. Slide 24, please. All right, so there's two types of routes on Data Power, and that's static and default. Chris actually kind of covered these a little bit earlier when he was talking about the interface configuration parameters. Static routes are used to define the path for network traffic, which is bound for a particular destination IP host range. If there's no static route configured, then Data Power will use the default route to direct traffic. For local traffic, there's actually a route which is created automatically at the time the IP and subnet is configured to an interface. Okay, slide 25, please. As I mentioned before, the default route is a catch-all route, which typically points to the Internet. This should only be configured if this route to the Internet exists on the network. Since each network is different, it's best to consult with your network team to determine if and when to use the default route. If a default route is used, it should be configured to just one interface. Okay, and now we can go to slide 26, please. Okay. Static routes, again, are used to route traffic through specific interfaces to ensure that they'll reach their final destination IP. Static routes are matched based on prefix. So if there's a tie, then the route with the lowest metric wins. And slide 27, please. Okay. So this is just an example of a routing table configuration. So this can be seen in the Data Power web GUI. If you go to the little search bar in the upper left-hand corner and type in routing table in the default domain, then you'll be brought to this screen. The top line shows an example of the default route, which is you can tell it's a default route because the destination IP is all zeros. This is configured to send all traffic via the E0 interface to the 1.2.3.1 gateway. So that gateway would be your default gateway. So this is your catch-all route. The next line is a local route, which is the one that's added automatically at the time the interface and subnet is configured. And the third line down would be an example of a static route. The destination is actually the entire 2-dot network IP range. This routing table example basically says if the destination traffic is on the 2-dot network, then use the 1.2.3.6 gateway to get there. If the destination traffic is not in the 2-dot network, then use the default gateway of 1.2.3.1. Go to slide 28, please, and I'm going to hand it back off to Chris.
Thanks, Phil. All right, so we're going to go over standby control. Standby control is configured in its own tab. On each of the different types of interfaces, there'll be the main, the advanced tab, and then a standby control tab. Standby control can be configured on Ethernet, VLAN, and link aggregation interfaces. A standby group is a collection of interfaces on different appliances which are going to share responsibility for a single virtual IP, which is commonly referred to as a VIP. As long as one interface from the group is up, the VIP will accept traffic. This provides increased failover capabilities and reduces single points of failure in the topology. Slide 29, please. When you're setting up your standby control group, there's going to be a couple different settings you need to specify. The first is going to be the group number, and this is going to be the standby group number in the multicast domain. This number must be unique per multicast domain. We would suggest working with your network team to ensure that no other group is using this number. Next, you will set up the primary virtual IP address, and this is going to be the IP address which is used by the active group member. This is also going to be the IP that traffic is actually going to be sent to. You can also set up additional secondary virtual IP addresses, which can be used for handling incoming traffic as well. Whenever there's a failover, the primary VIP and secondary VIPs will all move over to the active appliance. Slide 30, please. The next setting is enable preemption, which is going to default to off. When preemption is enabled, the highest priority interface is going to take over traffic whenever it rejoins the group. This forces more failovers than necessary and is not recommended to be enabled. In a case where preemption is on, if an appliance, for example, was to go down and fail over to a backup, once the primary comes back up, it's going to force another failover to take back control of the virtual IP address. On each interface that you're setting up standby control, you're also going to designate a priority. The interface with the highest priority is going to seek to become the active member, and this priority is used when there is communication between the different appliances to determine who should be the active controller of the virtual IP address. Slide 31, please. The authentication data is going to be used to determine if an interface is a member of the group. All the interfaces that you configure as part of your standby group are all going to need to use the same authentication data token. Generally, I see that it is left as the default, although occasionally some customers do specify their own custom value there. The hello timer and the hold timer are used to determine how the communication occurs between the active and the failing, or the active and the standby members of the group. Generally, we would recommend that you leave these as the default. The hello timer is going to be the frequency that hello messages are broadcasted, and these are used to gauge member status. the hold timer is going to be the duration to wait before attempting failover. So if a member does not see any hello messages from the active member for longer than the hold timer, that's going to trigger a failover. Slide 32, please. And this is a look in the web GUI at the standby control tab. In this example, it's on a link aggregation interface. However, this tab is going to be available for Ethernet interfaces and VLAN interfaces as well. The default hello timer is 3, and the default hold timer is 10. If you do need to change that, you want to make sure that the hold timer is more than 3 times the hello timer to ensure that there's at least 3 failed hellos before a takeover happens. Slide 33, please. I'm going to pass this off to Phil.
Okay. Thanks, Chris. So both Chris and I work in data power level 2 support, and we wanted to just highlight some of the more common problems or gotchas that we see out in the field. So the first one, and we actually see this a lot, is multiple default routes being configured on the device. So what this would mean is, say you're using more than one of the interface IPs, or one of the interface, more than one interface, you would configure a default route on two or three or several interfaces. The reason this is problematic is when data power can't find a static route for its destination IP, when it's looking in the routing table, it will go to the catch-all or the default route. If there's multiple default routes configured, then data power will randomly choose one. When this happens, it can send the traffic out the incorrect interface. So what can happen with this is it may actually reach the back end or the destination, but at that point the destination doesn't recognize the IP that it's being sent from. Or this traffic can be sent out on the network and it just never reaches its destination, so transactions are lost. So another gotcha that we found was IP conflicts. As the slide says, this most commonly happens when you are doing a migration or importing configurations from one of your data power devices to another. Basically, you have the same two different devices using the same IP, and this is invalid for any network. So something to just keep in mind if you import a configuration to your device and you're not able to access it, this can be a really common problem. You know, check the interface IP and make sure it doesn't match anything else on the network. Okay, and then the next one is using a half-duplex physical mode setting. So half-duplex basically means I talk, you listen, then you talk and I listen. So you can think of it as like a walkie-talkie, whereas full duplex would be like using a phone where both sides can talk at once. So you can imagine that using a half-duplex setting could definitely result in packet loss or increased latency for your network. As I said before, we recommend that you use auto-negotiation unless your environment is in need of something else. And this is something that you can talk with your network team about to understand what mode is needed here. Okay, slide 34, please. Okay, so just a couple more common gotchas. No static routes or default gateway defined for an interface. If there's no routes configured for traffic to get off the network, then you'll only be able to access this device if you're accessing it from another device that's on the same network. If you're off the network, then you won't even be able to reach the device. And then, of course, simple typos in IPs, subnet masks, and gateways. I know this sounds kind of trivial, but we do see this a lot. It's better to, you know, if you see a problem, go in and double, triple, quadruple check and make sure that you crossed all your T's and dotted your lowercase J's. Okay, slide 35, please. All right, and just a summary of everything that we've covered, the network interface types and configuration. We covered Ethernet, VLAN, and link interface, or I'm sorry, link aggregation interfaces for our network settings. We just discussed the parameters of those settings and really the defaults that are used and some of the best practices, and the same with the routing table, just how the routing table is configured and how it's intended to work, and what the best practices are for that. Okay, slide 36, please. Okay, and just a little more on the summary. Covered standby control and configuration of standby control and some of the best practices for that, and then, of course, the common gotchas or problems that we see in the field. Okay, and then slide 37. Okay, and this looks kind of light on my screen. I'm not sure if it does, but each one of these bullet points is actually a link that you can click on. For some of our favorite links, if any of the folks on the call are customers and have worked with Chris and I before, then you've probably seen us send you at least two of these three links. The one I really wanted to point out was the very last one, which is a brand new handbook that just came out, I think maybe a month or two ago. But this is a data power handbook that is specific to networking on data power. We tried to kind of design this this technical exchange to kind of go hand in hand with this. This book is you do have to pay for this book, but I think it's only about $10 on Kindle. You can get a Kindle edition or a physical edition. It's a great reference. It answers a lot of questions that you might have. It's definitely worth looking into if you know that you're going to be configuring and manipulating the network configuration settings on data power. I think we actually have one of these that's floating around here in the IBM office that we use as a reference as well.
Thank you, Chris and Phil, for this presentation. And now we are moving on to the question and answer session. There is a question in the group chat from Pete. For traffic sourcing from data power, is there a way other than static routes to force the traffic out from a specific interface?
And the answer to that is no. The static routes will need to be used. Sorry, just maybe to elaborate on that. When data power is looking to direct the traffic to the destination IP, it's going to look at that routing table first. And it's going to look for that destination IP or the destination IP's host range to determine where to send that traffic and which interface to use to send that traffic. So the static route is really the only way that this can be done.
Since there are no more questions, we will conclude the presentation. Joining us today, and thank you, Chris and Phil, for presenting. You all have a great day.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, everyone.
That concludes today's conference. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.